Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Revolution Radio Special Report. My name is Brian Powers, and I have been seeing what's coming. Unfortunately, I was hoping it wouldn't happen, but sure enough, this morning I woke up, went to do a little break-in about what I've been seeing in social media, activists getting shut down, people not being able to post in groups, as well as hearing about comrades getting visits from law enforcement. And immediately I knew I wanted to talk to you about this. And when I went to do it, sure enough, I could not post on Facebook as Revolution Radio. Twitter has stopped doing live streams. And so now our network, as far as the live streams, has only come down to YouTube. So if you're watching us on YouTube right now, I'm asking you, please tweet this out. Facebook, share it out, get it out on your Instagram accounts, and help us spread a little word. Because right now, as of now, I know that we are temporarily shut down on some of these platforms until January 23rd. But I guess the big question for myself and for all of us is now, what's going to happen next? What are the capabilities of these tech companies in shutting us down? And lucky for us, we have as a member of our editorial board, a Bennett Zarofsky, who can tell us about the legal side of things because he's an attorney. And Bennett, before I bring him in live, I got to thank him for his years of activism and service. He's the only attorney I know that will basically just represent activists pro bono. He has represented me on two separate occasions, charges that I had to face due to my activism. Not only did he represent me, but he gave me an opportunity and other activists an opportunity to make the political statements that we wanted to make through those arrests. So Bennett not only has helped every activist I've ever met in New Jersey, but he's also helped them in a way that gets our messages heard. And I thank him for that. And I also thank him for being with me today. Bennett, how are you there in my home state?
Well, I'm okay. I think we have warmer weather than you have up in Maine.
I'm sure.
We are either enjoying or suffering the effects of climate change, depending upon how you want to view it.
I'm watching what was a very snowy few hours turn into rain right outside my window here. So it's been a cold, very snowy day up here, but certainly it's beautiful up here. And I wanted to give you just a minute because it is your first time, and welcome to Revolution Radio, and thank you for becoming a member of our editorial board. You're certainly one of more esteemed members, so it's an honor to have you. Please, I'd love for you to just take a minute before we get into it to introduce yourself to Revolution Radio and tell us about your years of activism, a little piece of what you've done.
Well, I'm almost 70, and I've been active in one way or another since I was about 12. So I'm not going to be able to go through all of that. I would say that I make my living as an attorney, primarily representing labor unions and employees. And I also practice constitutional law. And I never represent corporations. I never represent bosses, except for now and then when a union has a dispute with one of its employees and their pre-existing client. I have sometimes had to represent management. And, I chose this field. When I got out of college, I made my living as a folk singer for 4 years. And I'm, I guess my greatest inspiration of that was Pete Seeger. And after a few years, I decided that it might be a good idea for me to become a lawyer, that might be a more effective way to work for social change, because unlike Pete, I'm not a songwriter. I was gonna help to fan the flames of discontent, as the wobblies say, but I wouldn't be making a major contribution unless I was either writing songs, and I certainly wasn't trying to become a star. So I went to law school, and after law school, I clerked for a federal judge for 2 years. And when it was time for me to look for work, he knew I wanted to be somewhere in the movement. And he told me the only way to really stay in the movement and make a living is if you can catch on somewhere as a labor lawyer, represent labor unions, because they'll tolerate the things you might do outside to push causes, even if they're not 100% with you every step of the way. And they're very good at paying their bills, unlike just about anyone else on the left. And they put you, but not because they don't want to pay the bills.
I understand. No, no. Hey, I get it.
Same resources. And so I got into representing labor unions, and that's been my principal living. The last few years, I have had to slow down my practice a bit because of some physical ailments. But I spent a great deal of time during the Trump years representing activists and representing the people. The number of demonstrations went up. It was very frustrating during the Obama years because people weren't going out in the streets and threatening him, and he was able to get away with all sorts of things we never should have let him get away with without a squeak anyway. Whether we could have stopped him, I don't know, but we certainly could have made a lot more noise than we did. But, you know, in addition to the lawyering, I've been leading for 25 years now a group called the Solidarity Singers of the New Jersey State Industrial Union Council. And we sing on picket lines and rallies and demonstrations. And we were doing that throughout, but, you know, it's kind of disappointing. Well, we did a lot of demonstrations with you, Brian. They were some of the better ones.
Yeah. I will tell you that, you know, you speak of the Solidarity Singers and the Industrial Union Councils. We're one of the first, I believe the first organization to donate to 15 now. And we're singing a song about us, I think only a couple of weeks after we started organizing. So definitely very helpful.
Well, it was about the cause of 15 now. It wasn't necessarily about your organization. But yeah, that's the cause. And
it was about 15 now. You said 15 now. It was
15 now, right? Well, you know, that was the name of your group, but it was also the name of the chant.
It was very uplifting. It was very uplifting to the people, you know, who were very, you know, to see some recognition because it was early on in the campaign, and it was like, hey, they're singing a song about our work. You know, it was a good day. You know.
Well, it's an important campaign. It's been slow, but, you know, President-elect Biden last week said that was part of what he wanted to see Congress pass quite soon. National minimum wage.
Yeah, so, well, we would have liked to see President, I don't know.
Well, that was my point. We were often disappointed that we'd be the largest contingent at these rallies. We would show up with 10 or 12 people to sing to encouraging spirits. And sometimes we'd be lucky if we had 10 or 12 people listening to us.
You know what?
Getting
10 or 12 people out to rally is a lot more than any neoliberal group or labor union that I could see organize unless they paid people. So, you know, it's to get people out in any capacity. And I think, you know, the people that came and saw you and that stuff were networkers too. So, you know, people that carried a message, you know, so it's, you know,
my point is that your 15 now rallies were among the best rallies we attended during the Obama.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm happy to be a part of that.
That was my point.
Yeah.
But in the Trump years, you know, the demonstrations have grown and we've had a lot of very powerful demonstrations. A lot of wonderful demonstrations. Mm-hmm. And I think they started to bear a lot of fruit. And, you know, certainly it was nothing like the Black Lives Matter demonstrations that we had this past summer with millions and millions of people going out in the streets all across the country. You know, unfortunately, as a group, choir singing is very dangerous in these days of pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you, I guess, you know, I wanted to get into a little bit of what's coming down as I guess repercussions of that. And like when you talk about the massive demonstrations of Black Lives Matter, you know, we saw police, you know, originally when Black Lives Matter came up, they were listed by the FBI as a terrorist group.
Of course they were. Because anytime black people get together, they're terrorists. I mean, there's a new film just been released about Dr. King and the FBI that they've been talking a lot on the national radio shows.
And now that we have this white supremacist activity in the Capitol, you know, what I'm seeing on my Facebook feed is that my comrades in New Jersey are getting visited by people who are saying that they're FBI and state police, maybe some other groups, Department of Homeland Security has been mentioned. But I'm also seeing, you know, this Facebook censorship, which maybe we'll talk about in a minute. But I think the most concerning and what could potentially lead to, you know, tragic loss of life in these interactions with law enforcement. I guess first off, the most important thing is why do you think law enforcement is approaching people and questioning them? And what should activists be doing if they are approached by law enforcement in the next kind of weird stuff?
You know, I don't know. I haven't spoken to anybody who's been directly approached. And about all I've heard about is some of the things that you told me earlier this morning. I think that law enforcement has both legitimate and illegitimate motives. The legitimate motive is that I think there's a genuine concern that there are going to be armed white supremacist and right-wing groups having demonstrations in state capitals and other places. And I think they do not want to see anti-fascist groups similarly armed confronting those organizations. I think that they want to leave it entirely to law enforcement to handle them. Now, I believe that is legitimate reason for them to inquire if there are any such plans afoot, and that would be plainly legitimate thing to do, because you don't want gunfights breaking out in the streets between rival groups of demonstrators. But it also makes their hypocrisy plain, because in places like Kenosha, they were welcoming of these right-wing militias,
right,
stand by the police, and they viewed them as allies. There's no consideration of welcoming the left-wing anti-fascist groups to stand side by side with the police as their allies in standing up to the genuine fascists that are out there. So, you know, that's the legitimate reason that I do believe may be motivating some of it. But it's laced with the hypocrisy, or it exposes the hypocrisy of what took place all across the country as many police, not so much in New Jersey, but in many places, welcome these militias to stand by them. The illegitimate reason, or really almost a stupid reason, is that the police can't tell anybody apart. They don't understand. They don't understand the basics, especially of what the left is really about. And, you know, they say that there's a threat. Anybody that they've ever viewed as a threat, they're trying to clamp down on, rather than making the distinction. And they really have a hard time wrapping their heads around the fact that this is this right-wing mob, because so many of them are members of, or aligned with members of, or friendly with members of these groups.
Oh, yeah.
So many of them are Trump supporters. I mean, to see the American flag taken down over the Capitol, one of the flagpoles, and replaced with a Trump banner. I mean, that's mindfuck on Revolution Radio. You know, that is something that these guys can't get their heads around. They've been carrying those Trump banners.
I think it's right. And I mean, we've all seen, from those of us that have been involved with Antifa, we've all seen the right wing messaging groups that cops are in, that the cop only boards where there's clear Oath Keeper messaging and other, you know, extreme. I'm not talking about American racism. I'm talking about extreme genocidal and extreme nationalistic type ideology, and police are running some of these groups. So what you're saying, though, Bennett, here...
What I'm saying is that they don't know how to crack down on their own.
Right.
They can't get their heads around the fact that we now have to keep an eye on all of our brothers in blue. You know, there's an article in today's Washington Post, which is interesting. They're saying that they're seeing unprecedented amounts of breaking of the blue wall of silence in response to what happened in the Capitol. That in many places around the country, police officers are making reports and turning each other in. But that's a very difficult thing for them to do. And they themselves don't know who to trust. I mean, the idea that in the Capitol Police, which is true, that while some of their brother police officers were being beaten up and even killed, there are other members of the Capitol Police who are telling the people where to go and escorting them around the Capitol building and helping them out and gently letting them leave. You know,
there are members of Congress giving tours to people that were involved the day before. And there's a lot of scare. And I guess, you know, when you say, yeah, my brother's in blue, I don't know that I have brothers or sisters in blue.
That's how they feel. They don't understand.
This is weighed against a sense in the activist community that I share at times against a more coordinated white supremacist effort in law enforcement. But I mean, so what you're saying is you tend to think this is more ignorance and kind of guided, useful idiots almost being guided by internal forces, which are, you know, intentionally infiltrating
think they genuinely want to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
They're showing up to activists who have never, and I know some of these people personally, like I've met them, and you know some of these people that have never in a million years would have organized anything like what happened. And the FBI is showing up and saying things like, oh, there were a lot of different groups down there, which is the same thing as what Trump said when he got up and said there are fine people on both sides. And now we have FBI agents showing up with the same type of fucking ignorance. And
I think it's ignorance.
Is it just ignorance?
I don't think, you know,
My paranoia here is that they're laying the seeds to make media reports to say that Antifa is being investigated by the feds. And all they got to do is show up to my house and ask me a few questions, and I tell them to go fuck themselves, or I need a lawyer or whatever. Now they can say they investigated me. Well, I can investigate anybody. I could go get a box turtle out of the stream in the backyard and ask him if he blew up the federal building. I investigated the box turtle now. And that's what they're doing. They're setting up this media stage of Antifa somehow being at fault for what happened in the Capitol, which is...
If they were going to do that, they would have been doing it starting last June, when Trump was still in office, when Trump was the commander-in-chief, when Barr was the attorney general of the United States, and even Barr was giving speeches about how Antifa is this big threat.
Yeah, well, there was...
That's when they would have been doing it, if that was their motive.
Well,
They can't tell who the threat is. They're so used to thinking of the Antifa side as being the potential threat that when their orders are to get out and do what you can to see what's going on and to stop it and let everybody know they better not try anything, they don't know who to go to. So they're going to all the usual suspects. Casablanca round up the usual suspects?
Well, have they gone to the NJ Sons of Liberty yet? Have they questioned those Nazis? You know, I mean, we know how to monitor these groups. Why don't they come and talk to Antifa and the people that work in Antifa about how to monitor right-wing groups, since they don't know how to do it? Maybe we could teach them.
All I know is what you've told me and what I read in the papers.
Yeah.
And what I read in papers, like, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post, is that they're cooperating with all these anti-fascist groups around the country. You know, they're talking a lot to the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they're talking a lot to other groups that are known for monitoring these groups, and they're trying to get the leads, and they really are hunting down a lot of leads. Why they let these guys out of the Capitol in the first place? I mean, they have no problem kettling Black Lives Matter protests, but they can let 1,000 people out of the Capitol building after they've wreaked havoc and send them home because the president loves them.
All right, counselor, let me ask you.
You just muted yourself.
Okay, counselor, let me just ask you this. If the police show up, I'm walking up to my house, all of a sudden two people in suits and ties with little shiny things in their wallet show me some, tell me they're from the FBI or Homeland Security, and they say, are you Brian Powers? What do I, first off, when can I shut up? Do I have to identify myself? What are my rights in being questioned? What information do I have to get them? And what information, at what point can I say, I need an attorney here?
Well, they have a right to stop you and ask you a couple of questions about what you're doing, but you could say, you know, are you arresting me or am I under suspicion of some crime? And you have no obligation to talk to them beyond identifying yourself. Really.
So just your name, they don't just saying, hey, yes, I'm Brian.
Maybe you don't show me your driver's license or something. To not do that creates a suspicion. Whether they really have probable cause to go beyond that because they haven't done that is debatable, but you don't want to have a scene on the street.
Okay.
All these constitutional rights are mythical when it's taking place on the street. You may have certain remedies or protections when you go to court, but number one, you don't want to get into an altercation with officers because the person that they beat up is always going to be wrong, even in the most extreme circumstances, and certainly on the ground. And that's certainly what you see with all the instances with Black people that have gotten so much attention from the white people.
With regards to videotaping the police, I did see one videotape where they asked that the guy put the camera down and not videotape their faces. I was kind of disturbed by that. You know, if you're out there and we've seen, you know, I know there's been some precedent about, you know, you are allowed to videotape the police as they do their work, but they kind of asked that he not videotape their faces. What are your rights as far as videotaping your interactions with?
Well, you have a right to videotape anything that you're directly involved in. Some states, there are restrictions against secret videotaping or videotaping things where people don't know you're present. But in general, you can videotape them, and for the most part, they should be videotaping you these days. More and more departments have video cameras, and one of the things I might say, officer, do you have a body camera? And would you please make sure your body camera is on? That might be a good thing to say if you're stopped by any sort of law enforcement. Or do you have a body camera? And if so, please turn it on.
Do you have a wind or a fan near your microphone or something? Because you're getting an awful lot of...
No, I don't. That I do sometimes have that problem for my internet connection.
I can try
and plug in my headphone and see if that works.
Let's take a minute. You know what I'll do is while we talk to everybody and while you take a look, I'll just let everybody know that Revolution Radio used to be known as New Jersey Revolution Radio, but we've rebranded. You'll notice if you're watching on the live stream right now, you'll see the new branding, and if you're listening to our podcasts, you can still find us at njrevolutionradio.com, but our Twitter handle, our Instagram, and all our ad accounts are at RevRadNat. That's R-E-V-R-A-D NAT, and that's our @ for Twitter, and we're on Instagram as well. So make sure you follow us, because we're not just for New Jersey anymore. We are still independent. We are still grassroots media, but we are for the national network of anti-capitalist activists. Bennett, I don't hear that whooshing anymore. I hope your voice
sound better now. How do I sound?
Oh, so much better. So much better. I appreciate that. Thank you. So getting it. So we were talking about, you know, these legal rights of videotaping police and things like that. And a little bit about why they might be conducting this investigation. And then the other part of it, which is, I don't know whether which is more disturbing. Obviously, law enforcement can bring about a level of, you know, incarceration and things that we don't want to get involved in if this thing keeps going downhill. And when I say this thing, I mean the country that we live in. Now, you have hope for the future. I think that's a good thing. I think we should all have hope for the future. And I know, you know, we discuss a little bit of our political differences, but one thing I think we're all on the side of is we need to push left, right? We need to, no matter who's in charge, we need to organize our communities. We need to fight for the working class. We need to fight for those that have been traditionally oppressed and marginalized, starting, you know, with indigenous peoples and African-Americans and LGBTQI comrades and all such people. But how do we do that when platforms are removed from us? One of the big strategies for Antifa is to make sure that if white supremacists gain platforms, that we take that platform away, that we report abusive language on Facebook and social media. So that's a weapon that can be turned on us. And it was turned on many of my comrades over the last couple of days. I've seen a number of posts and screen shares of members of the activist community not being able to either create or post in groups. I am not able right now to live stream on my Revolution Radio, which is an independent media company, not even just my own personal pages, but my company and how people make their livelihoods can no longer post, despite the fact that we have absolutely nothing to do with any violence. And, you know, this network in particular has spoken out against conspiracy theories and racism and the kinds of things that caused this disaster in our capital. Now I'm getting shut down.
Well, who's running, you know, who's shutting you down? I mean,
right.
You're dependent on what is he, the second richest man in the world? If you're talking about the Facebook platforms,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not your platform. I mean, you know, the internet itself is free. You can still get yourself out directly over the internet if people know to find you on a direct browser connection to New Jersey. I'm sorry, to Revolution Radio. You're not New Jersey Revolution Radio anymore.
I've been making them
right, but, you know, Facebook's under no obligation to handle you. I mean, you know, they keep on talking about repealing section, what is it, 323 or something. You know, that's a very interesting law, and it was passed specifically to keep the internet free and to allow uninhibited free speech. Now, Facebook and companies like Facebook, well, actually, Facebook owns most of the companies that were like Facebook. those companies have taken advantage of that, because the main thing it says is if you're operating a platform, you're not responsible for what other content creators put out on your platform. You don't have to serve the role of an editor. For example, the New York Times is responsible for everything that they print on their website or in the pages of their newspaper. I mean, the classic case that established a wide degree of press freedom against defamation, New York Times versus Sullivan, that was an ad that was purchased in the New York Times by Dr. King and other civil rights leaders to talk about what some of the sheriffs down in Mississippi and Alabama, I forget right now which state it was, were doing down there, okay? And then the sheriffs and their people sued them for defamation. And they not only sued Dr. King's and the others who had purchased the ad, they also sued the New York Times itself because it had published the ad. So now they ended up winning that case, But the underlying law, which is that they're responsible for everything that they print and can be liable and have to exercise control over it, stands today. And that's why they will not accept every single ad that people want to print there. They exercise editorial control over what advertisements they'll accept. Obviously, what they print in their letter column, I mean, everything else is obviously editorial control. So Facebook, you know, if they repeal 323, Facebook will have even greater control, because then they'll be responsible for everything, and they're likely to become a lot more conservative in what they'll print. They'll just want to print people talking about their baby and their wedding and so-and-so died and, you know, very, you know, let's get together with our bowling league, because they're going to be worried that they're going to be facing lawsuits from every direction, and the people who have the money, who are the people, you know, like Sheldon Adelson, may he rest in peace, and the Mercers, you know, and the Mercers and the Cokes, they got plenty of money to engage in what we call slap suits, strategic litigation against public participation. And, right. You know, I've had to represent a number of New Jersey groups against some of those too. And, you know, the difference in resources is phenomenal. You know, they can bring all sorts of stuff to bear. And, you know, they're lucky if they get, you know, me representing them pro bono. And, yeah. You know, if I represented them pro bono, there's only so much I could do, you know.
Well, I mean, they always have these large moneyed corporations have all the resources at this point. Like you said, you know, I mean.
Yeah, but in this case, we're entirely dependent on some of the biggest, richest corporations in the history of the world, right, for what we're all thinking of as our free speech.
Right. And I understand that difference. But so let me ask you, because there is no really free speech claim, because they own this private property, essentially what Facebook is. And that's not where I'm going with it.
Well, there's no free speech claim, but they're facing tremendous public pressure, mostly from the right. I mean, the right claims that they're the ones being censored, but, you know, Trump's big thing is he always accuses everybody else of doing exactly what he's doing.
Well,
you know, there's been tremendous pressure on them to shut down. And a lot of times they haven't shut down things. I mean, we've seen in some, like Burma, you know, what it did by allowing free speech. I mean, it's actually a very, very difficult problem as to how these companies can behave to keep the internet and places like Facebook free the way we want them to be, but yet cut out the real abusive stuff.
Well, I think we have a very bourgeois notion of what free speech is. Free speech is if you have the money, you can speak, and if you don't, you can't. So there's really no free speech in this country, because you're seeing that just applied in this social media world.
Well, if you have the money, you can spread your message.
We don't have free speech.
The question is who we're talking to.
Speech is a bunch of bullshit used by the bourgeois anyway. So
what you were talking about is how your site is now shut down right now, and you're unhappy about that. You had freer speech. Yesterday than you have today, because it was easier for you to reach your audience yesterday. And that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
And my free right now, the principal medium, you know, unless, you know, and what would be the difference? Let's say we had a socialist regime and the government and the people owned Facebook. What sort of control should be up then? And who would be exercising the controls? I mean, well, you know, you could think of some utopia, but there's a lot of capital that's necessary to keep Facebook up. The utopia, the capital has to come from somewhere.
There's a lot of labor that's involved.
There's also a lot of labor. There's,
we call it capital because we have capitalism.
No. There's a lot of labor. There's also, you know, I agree, but it isn't like it was.
Let me ask you, wait a sec.
You know, server farms that they got running up there above the Arctic Circle, there's like two people up there operating those server farms. But there's what's keeping all the internet running, and that's what's keeping all the thing. And that's capital that has to be provided by something. Now, I would say it should be provided by the governments. Frankly, I would like to see a single world government providing it. But, you know, we're a very long way from there. And right now, the closest we have is what's provided by the Facebooks of the world.
Let me ask you, from not from a free speech standpoint, but from an antitrust standpoint, and we know there's been some pressure politically, and there's even some growing movement, a bipartisan movement in Congress, to possibly break up Facebook, break up these big tech giants. Do you see, if in a couple of months from now, which is what's going to happen, if we all start to realize this is a big fucking mistake and you're censoring the wrong people? I realized it this morning, or I actually realized it yesterday when they were doing it to my comrades. And I knew this, and it was no surprise. But in a few months, when everybody starts to wake up to the fact that this was a bad idea, do you see this as having an effect pushing forward that political emphasis on breaking up big tech companies like Facebook, Google?
Well, I'm of two minds on that. I think, first of all, antitrust should be pursued. You know, there was a battle, you know, you may remember Robert Bork. You may be too young to have been alive for that fight, but he was going to be put on the Supreme Court, and he was stopped. He was stopped because he was too right-wing. That was the last time we had a really vigorous Senate hearing as to what someone really believed in terms of constitutional law. And he answered honestly, and the country was so repelled by what he thought the Constitution meant that he was rejected. But he was a big thing in antitrust law. He was an expert in antitrust law. And his campaign, which ultimately prevailed, is that it doesn't violate the antitrust. There's a long-standing theory in antitrust law that if you get so big that nobody can really compete with you, that you're the only game in town, whether people like it or not, that should be broken up. And he said, no, no, no. And this has prevailed ever since. He said, only if you became big by doing something illegal, by using some sort of illegal trade suppression technique on yourself. If you became big just because you had such a good idea, it became so successful and everybody wanted to go there, there was nothing illegal and we shouldn't break it up. What we're seeing in these cases, and I think it's very important, is they're saying you're too big, you have too much market control, therefore we have to break you up. But they're still trying to go to things like they're using their search engines in a way which favors the companies that give them the biggest product, and they're not giving people fair feeds just because they're trying, you know, people aren't paying for them. You know, they're going into these things that's still because they got to find something illegal that's any competitive. You know, they're still not willing. Yeah. They're still not able to just go and say it's too big, you have to be broken up.
Which is the
that now if you could the break them up. You know, if you break up Facebook, well, then what do you have left? I mean, Facebook is an amazing thing. Billions of people all over the world can connect with each other with great efficiency if they know how to find each other. I mean, that's an amazing thing. You break it up, what do you have? You don't have that tremendous resource. I think that taking a regulated industry model may actually be the better approach. You know, like you can't have companies competing to provide electricity to your community. You just end up with, you know, tremendous waste, both from an environmental point of view and from a capital point of view, and you tremendous inefficiency and clutter. You know, you get two telephone poles instead of one telephone pole and two wires instead of one wire. You know, it's you know, a regulated model might be a better thing because that would limit their profit. You know, they're only able to make a reasonable rate of return, which is based on what the regulatory agency declares to be a reasonable rate of return. You know, and it could set the rules that they have to follow. But as soon as you have a government regulation setting rules about speech that can be on and off, I mean, no matter how you do it, You're going to have a problem of how you suppress the speech you would really like to suppress without suppressing the speech you don't want to suppress, because from a constitutional sort of point of view, it's very hard to tell them apart.
We have, you know, if you join our editorial board, you can come backstage, and one of our comrades back there, Pat, is asking at some point, and I want to ask him, Pat, if you come on, because he wants to, he asked about considering Facebook like a cyber public square, and I just wanted to get a little bit into that with him. But Pat, if you could come on and explain to us, Pat, editorial board member, Revolution Radio, how you doing? You're asking about considering Facebook like a cyber public square. What do you mean? Maybe you could ask that question for us.
Well, just, you know, I mean, like malls in New Jersey, for instance, for, I guess they're, I don't know if they're totally a public square, but we have similar rights where you can go into a mall and pass out leaflets and stuff like that, have free speech guaranteed there. Is that something you could see being a possibility for Facebook, since it is, you know, I mean, you're saying a public utility, but it's also like kind of like a part of the public sphere, or maybe it has to become a public utility before that could be the case. So,
well, I litigated some of those cases, It's extremely limited what we have a right to do on private property. The protection of the owner of private property limits speech is very strong. It has been broken down a bit in New Jersey, but it's very limited. There is much more freedom of speech on Facebook now than is permitted under the public square theories where it caught on in New Jersey. You know, back in the 60s, the Supreme Court indicated they might go in that direction, but they had a rough turnaround, and then New Jersey does have it to a very limited extent. You know, they can limit how many groups are there at a time. They can limit how many times the same group goes there. And if they really get upset with what your leaflets say, they can even stop you from, you know, like you have free speech on public issues, but not necessarily on commercial issues. Mm-hmm. Like if you say, well, I'm opposed to what's going on in Iraq, and I believe that the owner of this store supports the Iraq policy, so therefore I want you to boycott the store. They're not going to let you say that under the mall, and I don't think the courts are going to make them. So I think right now Facebook is very much a public forum. Their algorithms limit who gets to see what, but there's much more freedom of speech on Facebook than there is on YouTube and Instagram and Twitter and all those platforms. There's much more than you have in the New Jersey malls and to some extent on college campuses, where there's another case from New Jersey involving Princeton, where they had to let somebody stay on Princeton even though they didn't want to let them stay there and speak. It's much broader on Facebook. I mean, Facebook is pretty uninhibited.
Yeah. All right, Bennett, I want to ask you a question before we go, because I think we should all get to our weekend. Looks like I have some snow shoveling to do. I'm going to get a check for $600 from the outgoing Congress. And then incoming President Biden said 2,000, but I heard now that's 1,400.
Well, and he said 1,400 to round it up to 2,000.
Right. I'm just doing a little pool with our editorial board members to see who can come the closest to what our checks will actually be without going over. So what number should I put you down for, Bennett?
I'm not getting any of it because I earn too much money.
Well, I should be getting some.
I'm on the cutoffs.
You can send me your extra money, and then you can get that check. Well, how already much money, Bennett? We were told 2,000. It became 1,400. When I get my Biden check, what is your guessed amount closest without going over will win a great prize?
I mean, as to what your check is going to be?
Yes. What are we going to land? Well, what are they going to give me? What are they going to give me to make me love Joe Biden?
I hope he gets the entire 1,400 passed, okay, which is to round it up to the 2,000 that should have been in the bill that was passed.
And we're not doing that, liberal.
For 600.
We're not doing that, though. It's 14. If I get a check for $1,400, I got 600 from Trump. If I get a check for it doesn't make 2,000, it makes 1,400.
Well, if you get the check, it'll be 1,400 if you get it. I thought that Biden's speech earlier this week was pretty good, a lot better than we might have expected in terms of what he's going to do. His approach on stimulus is definitely bottoms up, according to that speech. Now, let's see what's in the final bill. But I think we should be, you know, you talk about pushing left. It also means saying what's good is good and trying to get more rather than saying it's no good.
Basic income, and all of us get $2,000 a month for the rest of our friggin' lives plus health care.
I would vote for that.
I know you would, but that ain't nowhere even near the discussion because he already talked himself back from 2000 all by himself.
Well, I disagree with that. I think when he was first talking about 2000, it was before the 600 was passed. And I think that by 1400, he's getting it to 2000 that he was talking about there. I mean, look, that's, you know, I think that Biden right now has to be supported and encouraged while we're pushing him. You know, we are facing a right-wing insurrection. And everybody, including the typical right-wing sources, are saying this is for real, and they're going to keep on shooting and things. And he's their number one target. He's their number one target. And we have to get this country to reject Trumpism. And I know if they do that by embracing Biden, they're nowhere near where we want them to be. But Biden is someone that we can talk to and someone we can influence. You know, under Biden, Bernie Sanders is going to be the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee. I mean, you know, we're going to be getting stuff. We're going to be getting stuff.
You have a positive outlook. I'm not going to argue with you. Today was about informing our audience. We're going to be on.
I think the results in Georgia have to give us a positive attitude. Stacey Abrams is a great hero of the Republic.
You give me my donors give me a positive attitude. When I get my check for $450 from Joe Biden, I'll have you a guy on again and we could talk about our positive attitudes together. Before we go, though, let me just make sure that you get all your thoughts in. I'd love you to take a few minutes, and I know you're involved with so many activist groups. Please make sure that people know how to get in touch with you and your organizations, and you know that we can continue to support you as much as you can.
All right. Well, I have a law practice in Montclair, New Jersey. I have a website, ZarofskyLaw.com. There's not much on it, except it does tell you how to get in touch with me. My email is bzarofsky@zarofskylaw.com. My name is spelled on the screen, and if you spell that right, my email is simple. That's the way to get in touch with me. Brian knows how to get in touch with me because he's been a repeat client. How to reach me.
You get into trouble a lot. You get to meet very nice people like Bennett.
You know, I think what I just said about the incoming administration and what I think is very important for us to do is kind of my summation. You know, lawyers are by nature, our business is compromise. We try to do the best we can do for our client, given the realities of the current situation. You know, we can only really serve our client's interests. You know, there are some cases where you go down and you stick to your guns, but, you know, it depends on what the client wants and what the consequences are. You know, if you're facing a municipal court charge, you can make a stand because the worst that's going to happen to you is they'll fine you $300 instead of $50 or something like that, you know. But in terms of the fate of the country and the welfare of all of us and the welfare of the planet, you know, I think that right now to get out of Trump, we really have to be solidly behind the Biden administration while constantly pushing them. I mean, I think listen to people like AOC. listen to people like Stacey Abrams, you know, listen to Bernie, listen to Elizabeth Warren. I think those are the people we should take our lead from. Those are all people who, yes, are going to stay working within the system. They're not going to burn their bridges with Biden, but they're going to keep pushing Biden. I think that's where we have to be. I think that's really our only choice because they've got more guns than we got. The blessing is that Trump only won over the police. He didn't convince the military. He alienated the leadership of the military. And if he hadn't alienated the leadership of the military, he would have prevailed. He only got the police, and he was too inept to really organize the police nationally to really come out. He only got the most militant to come down to the Capitol that day. And, you know, they faced a divided police defending against them, which were ultimately enough to prevail. You know, the next one won't be so inept. We really have to strengthen the center in this country, and we have to destroy the Republican Party. And the only way to do that is to convince these – I mean, they got 70 million people to vote for this guy. And even now the polls are showing that 60% of Republicans still think that the election was stolen from Trump. People who identify – I mean, that's millions and millions of people. They're not going away. They've been brainwashed. They're white supremacists, whatever you want to call them. We got to find some way to calm those people down.
Well, I think we got to have a lot more discussion about tactics and strategy because, you know, I like staying outside the system completely. I came from a background where I did a lot of electoral and mainstream work. You know, I came from, you know, that union labor background. But as I get more involved with activism, I just find more hope in dealing with the grassroots. And, you know, I know it's all part of revolution, though. So I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your support of Revolution Radio. We definitely got to have some more discussion. And like I said, that call is coming when I get that $400 check. All right, comrade. Thank you to everybody on our editorial board who makes this possible. We're going to watch our trailer again. You can go to www.njrevolutionradio.com. Please make sure you share this stream out and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It does look like our other social media platforms are going to be limited, at least for the next week. More to come on that. I'll keep you updated the best we can. But just please support us, share us out, and make a donation today. Until I see you soon, this is Brian Powers. Thank you for being a part of Revolution Radio.